All lines are now bridged.
All right, thank you very much and welcome everybody. And we appreciate you joining the Public Health Data System Task Force this morning. I'm Mike Berry with ONC and we are going to get started because we have a packed agenda. I'm going to call roll. So when I state your name, please indicate your presence. And I'll begin with our co-chairs, Carolyn Peterson.
Good morning.
Janet Hamilton.
Hi, good morning.
Danielle Brooks.
Hello, good morning.
Denise Chrysler.
Good morning, welcome to a wonderful day.
I don't think that was Denise Chrysler. I think Denise is joining us about 11. Jim Daniel.
Good morning, I'm here.
Steve Eichner.
Good morning.
Nagazi Azike. Claudia Grossman. Steve Hendricks.
Present.
Jim Gerges.
Present.
John Kansky.
I'm here.
Bryant Karras.
Good morning.
Stephen Lane.
Good morning.
Nell Lepris.
Good morning.
Les Leonard.
Good morning.
Denise Love. I think Denise is with us, but she may be on mute. Arian Malik.
Good morning.
Clem McDonald. Aaron Neary.
Good morning.
Larry Moll. Abby Sears.
Good morning.
And last but not least, Cheryl Turney. All right, thank you, everybody. And I'd like to now turn it over to Carolyn and Janet for their opening remarks. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome back to our next meeting of the Public Health Data Systems Task Force. I have appreciated all of the feedback that you have been putting into the questions we've been sending out each week. Our intention today is to pull up the crosswalk on the screen and start to review some of those items and some of that feedback. I will be clear that we have quite a lot to do, and if I am more assertive than usual in asking you to keep your comments brief and moving along, I hope you will forgive me. It comes from a place of wanting to be sure that we continue to stay on course and move through the work, and not from a place of disrespect or disagreement with your opinions. With that, I will pass the mic to Janet.
Great. Thank you so much and welcome everyone. I too want to echo Carolyn's comments and appreciate everyone's time and that they are putting into the homework and the questions. We are very excited to be having this convening today and are going to focus some of our conversations a little bit more in detail on pieces around electronic laboratory reporting for our discussions today, as well as thinking through key issues to really support improved data collection to address issues around health equity. I will also just say from the homework perspective, it is really helping us on the tight trajectory and timeline that we are on to get our thoughts coalesced so that we can have recommendations to put forward. So just thank you all for your time today and also for all of your efforts outside of these meetings. And I will turn it back over to you, Carolyn.
Thanks, Janet. So our agenda for the day is to dig into the crosswalk, and then our ONC partners, Brett and Brenda, will walk us through the next steps. We'll have a public comment period and then adjournment. So if we could advance the slides, please. As you see, we've gone through our role of roster of members, and this is our charge, just very briefly, to review for the folks on the phone. The PHDS Task Force will identify and prioritize policy and technical gaps associated with the effectiveness interoperability and connectivity of information systems relevant to public health, and also identify characteristics of an optimal future state for information systems that are relevant to public health and their use. And the next slide, please. So now we will be starting into discussion of what is in the recommendations crosswalk. You will recall this is being formed based on the feedback you are giving us in the homework, the information and commentary that you are submitting. That is still a work in progress, so we thought today we would put it up on the screen and talk through what has been submitted so far. We are looking primarily for clarification and brief comments and considerations about how we might modify this. We will be asking that you keep your comments quite brief and stick to the point, because we want to be sure that we have a robust and comprehensive discussion but are able to continue moving through the items. With that, I will ask ONC if you could bring the crosswalk up on the screen for us, please. We're still here. There's a bit of a lag in the technical on the Adobe. We're trying to get it large enough that you can read it.
This is Janet, and while we're working on the technical issues to get the crosswalk a little bit more readable, I just want to take this opportunity also to remind people, in addition to the overarching charge and the framing, which I think we can all appreciate is a broad charge, that as a group we have also refined the scope in terms of what we're really thinking about the place for comments and for this group to have meaningful recommendations. And so we really want to focus our recommendations and your thoughts and comments on the place where there are interactions between clinical data systems and the clinical healthcare sector and public health, and the provision of that data to public health, as well as, of course, opportunities for public health to be providing data back. So thinking very thoughtfully and carefully around how that process and interaction should happen. We realize, of course, there's a lot that happens internal once the data is received, but really trying to think about the public health, healthcare connection.
That's a great point, Janet. Thank you for bringing that up and encouraging us to focus on the interactions and the work that HITECH can inform, that ONC can inform, as opposed to the very broad venue of public health where there are things that health IT can't really address. So we now have the crosswalk up on the screen. The first topic, syndromic surveillance, ILI. The gap is that there is an availability of rich data that is not tapped into to support syndromic surveillance. The opportunity is to consider better use of surrogate markers, such as employee absenteeism, to identify early clusters and outbreaks. And a recommendation that was first posted is that CDC should explore non-traditional data sources and surrogate markers, such as employee absenteeism and others, that could be leveraged to identify early clusters and outbreaks of disease incidence. There's a comment here that this is not new, that CDC has piloted monitoring of Google search for the flu even back 12 years ago. What would be novel is a system for monitoring absenteeism or changes in driving patterns or any number of areas. Of course, these are not very specific signs of problems, and you could have false positives. So if you can, what do we want to say about looking at non-traditional data sources or looking for surrogate markers? Please raise your hand in Adobe, and we'll get the discussion started. Go ahead, John.
Yeah, Carolyn, super quick comment is I assume ILI is influenza-like illness, and I was surprised, too, that that was the narrowness of syndromic surveillance. Do we really need ILI in there when I think from public health data we'd want to be surveilling for stuff beyond just ILI?
Okay. Leonard?
Yeah. I agree with that. I think syndromic is really also not the right word because we're not really talking about chief complaint monitoring. We're really talking about early data from emergency departments and other outpatient systems. So it may be just preliminary codes rather than the traditional 12 or so syndromes that have been used in syndromic surveillance. So early data from the health system produced, early real-time data from the health system.
Thanks, Les. Let's go to Bryant Karras.
Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to, can you guys hear me?
Yep, go ahead.
I wanted to a bit of thread on the ILI. So in the early days, influenza-like illness was the closest we had to identifying coronavirus-like illness. The syndromic surveillance community quickly stood up a workforce to make modifications to the detection algorithms within the syndromic surveillance feed. I think that's why ILI was used as a shorthand there. My comment would be that I think that we can look at other alternative data sources, but I think the bigger opportunity that we found incredibly valuable is that we were getting data feeds from ambulatory care and primary care settings, not just emergency departments and urgent care. And that data coming in through our syndromic surveillance feeds were able to be analyzed to look at what the impact of COVID was on the population. We had much, much better situational awareness than we would have had we not previously stood up those connections to ambulatory care or primary care.
Thanks, Bryant. Let's go to Denise Love.
Yes, thank you. I support this recommendation, but I think some criteria for what sources would be appropriate. And so my recommendation would be, for the non-traditional sources to assess them on their availability, the continuity, and, just the evaluation of the quality of the sources before they are accepted as use for alternative or early indicators.
Thanks, Denise. Steve Eichner, please.
Yes, thank you very much. Very quickly, I'm not sure looking at what data sources you're going to find that are timely looking at absenteeism. Most of the time, I think you're going to see data that's a week old or 2 weeks old rather than instantaneous or same-day data like we're seeing out of syndromic surveillance, out of EDs. One easy thing that we can do to help maintain the data that we have is in looking at the current proposed final draft rule for promoting interoperability modifies reporting to not include urgent care setting data. And if we want to make sure that we're continuing to get good quality data, we probably want to make sure that urgent care data is included in that reporting and that hospitals and other providers are encouraged to supply data. And it might very well be that through regulatory action, we can expand the collection of data to additional centers beyond urgent care to more normal ambulatory care settings and potentially include data from my EMS calls. Thanks.
Thanks. A quick follow-up from Les Leonard.
Yeah, just to comment that in addition to ambulatory EHR data, the data from point-of-care testing, that much of ambulatory infectious disease now is can be, you know, managed through a strep swab or an influenza bedside test.
Okay, thanks. And Stephen Henricks.
We have quite a bit of experience with this with our bio preparedness program, and we found that a large employer absenteeism preceded the emergency room and acute care by several days, and in fact found that the most beneficial predictor of absenteeism was the railroads, because they have to staff the railroad 24 hours ahead of time. And so that correlated very well with the subsequent outbreak of disease. So in bottom line, totally endorse the idea for non-traditional sources.
Thanks. And let's go to Jim Jurgis.
Yeah, I know as we're talking about alternative sources, just curious whether there's a direct ability to monitor, for example, Walmart, CVS, et cetera, for particular prescriptions filled as an indicator of outbreaks regionally.
That I don't know. I see Clem McDonald's hand is up. If someone has an answer for Jim's question.
Well, it is. I think it should be trivial. Something like 70 or 80% of all the prescriptions go through Surescripts, you know, on the fly. And they should have real-time data. So I think that's an easy one. But unless they don't want to play, I think they probably would.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Sorry, Carolyn. This is Janet. I think the recommendation then that we're hearing here is that to explore additional data sources and develop the criteria around which of those data sources are worth exploring. So the timeliness, I think, is one big issue when it comes to how the data will be used, if it will be used for early detection and or how it can be used during an event and over the course of the event to monitor things like situational awareness.
Thanks, Janet. I see Brian's hand is up. One quick follow-up,
yeah.
And then we'll move to the next
one. A quick follow-up on the pharmacy. I think pharmacies and laboratories, for that matter, we had, you know, less traction on getting them to submit syndromic surveillance feeds because they weren't incentivized under meaningful use and promoting interoperability. There was no, you know, financial reward for them complying with the public health reporting. So I think that's, you know, creating those incentives to do the work is important. Over.
Thanks, Bryant. Let's move to the next recommendation. ONC, if you're able to slide the slide over a bit so we can see the topic and the gap in opportunity, slide it to the left, please. Thank you. So our next one has to do with ELR, the adoption of IG. The gap is incentives in meaningful use were minimal and directed at providers, and some states still have not onboarded. The opportunity is that ELR could be improved through lab and public health agency adoption of IGs. So the recommendation here is ONC, CMS, and CDC to explore providing incentives for labs and public health agencies to adopt certified public health systems that accept standardized ELR notifications, with an edit to add corresponding certification for lab resulting and ordering to address end-to-end data flows between order, lab, and public health. So I see Arian Malik's hand is up. Please go ahead.
Thank you. So I added the text and add corresponding certification criteria. The point here, as we found in the ISP task force, is that we have intentionally adopted a sort of piecemeal, non-standards-based approach for lab ordering and resulting for ambulatory care providers. And because of that, we're not capturing information at source in ways that flow to lab with complete information. So this is the point that upgrading those systems helps lab achieve more complete information on order. That helps address demographic information. And then I probably should have added that we need certification criteria on the lab and the public health side to make sure that we have testing certification for the lab to public health end of the window. And I've got a comment later on relative to implementation guidance on this topic as well. Thanks.
Thanks, Arian. Let's go to Jim Gerges.
Yeah, I just wanted to comment that all of that, it's great. If addressing the incentives and the certification standards for the relevant data for labs and public health systems is fantastic. And there were other things that turned out to be important, like PPE, staffing, absenteeism, that each of the players in this space should be identified, and then incentives and data certification standards would apply. So I wouldn't just limit it to lab and public health. I would consider other sources, namely
Thanks.
PPE and staffing.
Thanks, Jim. Let's go to Steve Eichner. Steve, you might be on mute.
In addition to considering certification criterion, I think we really need to look at how we are routing information for lab reporting. The fact of the matter is that most labs are really not that interested for their business purposes in whether I went to Aruba or other facts about my demography. They're interested in the data they need to process my specimen. By routing information through the labs, we're asking the labs or requiring the labs to modify their systems and store data that's not really relevant to their business. If we were to explore other options of routing data, leveraging HIEs, where the HIEs could then populate the demographics and additional information, we're then going to get more complete data for public health, reduce the need to modify systems that don't really need the data for anything other than a pass-through, with the added benefit of reducing identity theft, because you're not going to get as much information if you were to get information from a laboratory, with an additional benefit of providing test results back to a patient's regular care team if they had a test that was kind of out of cycle, like many of the drive-through tests that people got during COVID-19 from third parties, where the ordering provider or the testing facility was part of the provider's or the patient's usual care network. So those results were kind of lost, if you will, from a continuity of care perspective. I also think from an incentive perspective, it really needs to be fully funded on the public health side, or perhaps the regulatory impact that needs to take place on the vendor side so that the vendors are selling certified technology rather than on public health looking at having to validate their certification. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve. Let's go to Bryant Karras.
Hi. Well, one quick. I still haven't gotten access to the Google Doc for some reason. It references meaningful use were directed towards providers. It was exclusively directed towards hospitals, not eligible providers. So I think we need to correct that in new comments that are coming forward to ONC. I mean, I think our ONC colleagues can't comment on that, but I think that's something important that public health needs to extend, that especially with point-of-care testing becoming so important, and as we saw with drive-through tests and atypical test pop-up locations, hospitals were not sufficient for incentivizing the reporting public health. I agree with Steve that there are better ways to, at the point of registering for the specimen collection, linking that patient with their medical record system and with their primary care provider so that the results are viewable to everybody. We had a couple of pilot attempts to do this, but it was it should have been easier. There are processes that we could implement to make that work. I think it's only going to get more complicated now that we have true at-home test kits that aren't even administered at a laboratory.
Thanks, Bryant. Let's go to Clem.
A number of points. Firstly, I think when we talk about extending certification to all these other places, I think we're going to be careful what's in the law. I don't think every place can be constrained or controlled by certification, but I'd like to hear from people who know better. Secondly, I think about some of this, we're too diffuse. So we want to do good and, you know, save world hunger and all that other stuff. It's all good and well, and I think they're good positions. But in terms of the ordering, the main problem is the registration segment doesn't go along with it, but it could easily. So if we focus on that, that could be fixed. We heard earlier that some systems just forget to send it along. And the third thing, I think a really major giant problem is point of care testing, because no matter what you do, they're not typically an instrument with any electronics on it. And it'll be a burden. It just won't happen unless we figure out some ways. There is work underway now to figure out ways that maybe with barcodes or various kinds of gizmos, you could take a picture of that and picture of something else, and you could send it. But we got to really focus down, because that's going to be half of testing.
Thanks, Clem. Let's go to Stephen Henricks.
I want to speak specifically to the data elements that should be included in the certification process. As you just heard, it could be registration, but as most people know, right now there are only two data elements required for identification, and we need to add more, and I would say that should be, in addition, contact information, possibly including the physician's office, but certainly contact information of the individual being tested. Thank you.
Thanks, Stephen. Are there any other comments from task force members? Please raise your hand in Adobe. Let's go to Danielle Brooks.
Yeah, I just wanted to piggyback with the contact information. I just think that there needs to be specificity around that information, because one of the biggest challenges is current information. So we just want to make sure that there's some type of static way of connecting with people. Typically, addresses are very flexible, and phone numbers easily get disconnected. So as we think about this contacting component, we want to make sure that there's a universal methodology in that respect, so that that contacting piece can be consistent. because from a downstream impact, that was one of our biggest hurdles, was up-to-date information, even upon registration, that tends to shift, particularly with populations that may be underserved. So thank you.
Thanks, Danielle. Any other hands, any other comments from the task force members? Please raise your hand. Okay, I see no other hands, so let's move to the next recommendation on the list. And this is in the topic area of improve funding. The gap here is that there is insufficient funding in public health, and funding structures are too rigid when responding to emergencies. The opportunity is funding for public health across states will ensure necessary shared resources are available. And the recommendation here, the draft recommendation, is that CDC should develop plans for cross-program funding of technology investments that support interoperability across public health platforms, with edits that public health data systems should be certified for interoperability and incentive payments should be made to state and local public health departments to support adoption of certified systems. CDC should allocate funding for capability development, such as contact tracing, that serves multiple public health goals separately from disease-specific funding. So if you have comments, Task Force members, please raise your hand in Adobe. And let's go to Nell Lepre.
Hi. I added a comment in here as well, but I think I agree with the goal of the certification for public health. I think I would want to be more specific in the language around it, though. Completely agree that certification around interoperability is important, but I think there should be a minimum functional standard that we're looking to that focuses not just on interoperability through, you know, consistent adoption of standards, but also focuses on things like infrastructure and scalability, so we can actually scale to handle some of the volumes that we've seen in the pandemic that in some instances public health may not have been able to scale to. So agree with the goal. I think maybe just updating the wording around that would be good.
Thanks, Nell. Let's go to Danielle Brooks.
Yeah, I think there also just needs to be a consideration of equity around the funding. We know that several states are under-resourced and do not have the current standards. So I think within this kind of allocation, there should be equity considerations just to make sure that we are having at least a consistent setup and standard for the availability of being able to respond to this, and recognition that not all states, counties, departments are funded equitably at this time.
Thanks. Let's go to Bryant Karras.
Yeah, I think that we have to be careful on, you know, the certification of what, because I believe, you know, 49 out of 50 states have, you know, a certified product in their possession that was purchased by CDC for all the states that can do interoperability. The challenge is not the certification of the product itself, it's the appropriate implementation, because you can take that certified system and only implement it, you know, crippled behind too many firewalls, or only connected to one of the five systems that you need it to be connected to. It's that, you know, the devil's in the implementation, and it's a certification not of the product itself, but of the functionality and how that product is implemented.
Thanks. Let's go to Steve Eichner.
Thank you. In addition to funding not only technology, there also needs to be funding directed to public health for participation in broader environments and support for potentially in modification of those environments. Like TEFCA, there's certainly the potential to leverage the TEFCA technology and the TEFCA approach to support public health reporting. But public health has a very, very small voice in the development of TEFCA because of the way the TEFCA work groups have been set up, focusing on QHINs without a substantial public health voice at the table. There also needs to be better linkage and perhaps leveraging Medicare and Medicaid funds to support public health activities. Many health departments have worked diligently with their Medicaid counterpoints to leverage APD funds and high-tech funds to implement technologies to support meaningful use and providers and connectivity. The process for public health to access those funds was a bit cumbersome. If there's a way of streamlining that effort and making it easier to request and implement those technologies, that would be fantastic. Thanks.
Thanks, Steve. Do we have other comments from task force members? If so, please raise your hand.
Sorry, Stephen Lane here. Don't have the hand raised function in front of me, but I think that point about more robust engagement of different public health subject matter experts and stakeholders in the TEFCA process is one that we should clearly, you know, include in this as the feedback goes back to ONC. They certainly have the power to do that. I think perhaps, Steve, some more specifics around who, you know, what types of public health actors could best do that would be helpful.
That would be good to put in the homework in one of the spreadsheets so that we can record it that way and not move into a tangential discussion right now. That's a good point. And I see Flem has his hand raised. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I think, you know, we hear a lot about the fact that public health's not involved, but I think the involvement is not, I think it's got to be a mutual involvement. You know, there's a problem occurred with specimen identification because CDC at least tends to not want to name the specimen in the test name. But, and then they would expect it comes in a segment that's the specimen segment. From what I understand, the specimen segment is hardly ever there. So that's a big disconnect, you know, and you can just say, okay, we'll make everybody do it. But both two sides have made different choices more or less. And there should be some dialogue in those choices, and that be one way.
Thanks, Clem. Let's go to Denise Love.
Yes, and I agree that public health needs to be involved with TEFCA, but also with a broader national standards process. And so I've often thought that HHS or CDC should fund a small cadre of public health experts to attend all those meetings, much like the specialty societies and payers and others pay their folks to go across all of the meetings and weigh in on all kinds of standards development, not just TEFCA. And this would be the, you know, X12, HL7, NCPVP, and others, but a public health group that is tasked with bridging these gaps would be very important.
Thanks, Denise. And with that, I think we will move on to the next recommendation. If you could scroll up, please. Great, thank you. So the next draft recommendation is formation of a standing public health group. And the gap here is that many important topics are out of scope for this task force. No surprise, I think we've run into that several times. So the recommendation here is that CDC and ONC should explore creation of ongoing public health task force or work group to address topics that are out of scope for the high-tech public health data systems task force to ensure preparedness for future high-consequence public health emergencies. And I see Steve Eichner's hand is raised. If you would be brief, please.
Absolutely. Thank you. There actually already is a task force established under the CDC and ONC, the Public Health Task Force on Interoperability. I currently serve as co-chair, and staff support is provided by Sanjeev Tandon out of the CDC. We focused for the last few years mostly on supporting, promoting interoperability and meaningful use activities, and regularly supplied comments when new final rules have been published, as well as some other documents and strategic plans and the like out of ONC. That task force certainly could have its scope improved or modified to address additional issues. I think another important component of that, however, is making sure that there are good listening sessions and opportunities for the task force to provide feedback to ONC, CDC, HITECH, and other relevant entities. Thanks.
Thanks. I see Denise Love's hand is up. Please go ahead, Denise.
Yes, yeah, sorry to talk so much today. I also think whatever is modified or established should consider also the National Committee on Vital and Health Statistics, which is FACA committee. And I know there's work that we're doing with ONC right now on convergence of clinical and administrative data. So I would just like to put in that NCVHS should also be involved in any eventual public health task force.
Yes, I think some of the HITECH members that are on this task force have been involved with the ICAD work. So we already have bridging in some senses for that. Let's go to Bryant Karras.
Yeah, I think that in addition to the task force that Steve mentioned, which has done some incredible work in putting recommendations out to help public health agencies learn how to adopt and have a roadmap towards standards adoption, I think one of the other key things that needs to be prioritized is getting more participation in the standards body development process. And currently, the HL7, for example, has a public health work group that only has two or three states represented on it, and we really need to see broader participation. And somebody mentioned earlier NCPDP. I think there's some opportunity to get state involvement to push a migration towards a common standard across these different bodies, HL7, NCPDP, and others. Thank you.
Thanks, Bryant. Let's go to Danielle Brooks.
A very brief comment, and also just making sure that we keep kind of that insight and foresight to make sure that we include health equity components within this public health body. Again, just trying to make sure that we are learning from past instances in terms of how these pandemics typically impact communities. And so as these opportunities evolve, this will allow a health equity by design. And thus, just making sure we keep that in the conversation and that awareness as we, support the development of this type of body.
Thanks, Danielle. We'll be sure we include that in the revision to this recommendation. That's an important point and an important consideration, not just at this point, but across other recommendations as well. Seeing no other hands up related to this recommendation, I think we will move ahead and tackle the next one. It is got several parts to it, so I imagine we may have a robust discussion on the next one. If you could scroll up slightly, ONC, it will give us all a better view. And then a little bit more. Great. Thank you. So this recommendation has to do with major gaps in standards adoption for key surveillance use cases. And the gaps are many. I will start reading the list. Lack of adherence to existing standards, like ELR, IIS, and so on. A low uptake of newer standards, ECR, and a lack of certification requirements for ECR. Missing data can be due to a lack of or variance in reporting standards across jurisdictions. there is duplicative or misaligned reporting requests that add to provider administrator burden. There is a lack of incentives for standards adoption. Providers struggle to send information even through the immunization gateway, as there are variations in the data sent in each state. ADT-based surveillance is not fully leveraged due to a lack of incentives for adoption by providers and EHR vendors. There is a standard for syndromic surveillance messages referred to in meaningful use regulations, however. Demographic and SDOH data come from the EHR, but this is often not included in what is sent to labs. And then there are still additional gaps, but I think we get the picture. The opportunities here are to think differently about the intent and use of data to and from laboratories so that not only billing data is captured, but also demographic and SDOH data. And second, there is a need for case data to go to public health agencies, but also a great opportunity for bidirectional data flow from public health to providers. So here we have 7 recommendations drafted. It's quite a lot. I think I will read through them, and then we can just have some comments about them taken as a whole, since this is one area, and we can tease out which goes where as we draft the written version. So draft recommendation 1, ONC should support the development of IGs, clarifying and specifying standard data sets and mnemonics for reporting public health data and accompanying testing and certification both for senders and receivers. Number 2, ONC and CDC should work with provider and standards community to ensure use of standards and implementation guidance that include demographic and contact elements that are required in public health reporting, for example, race, ethnicity, and contact information. Number 3, ONC should require ECR and ECR now within its certification program. Number 4, CDC should work with state and local partners to standardize reporting requirements at the federal and state level to avoid duplicative requests. Number 5, ONC and CMS should explore incentives for the adoption of ADT-based surveillance standard. Number 6, CMS should explore making ECR implementation a condition of participation for hospitals. And number 7, CDC or others should incentivize or support public health jurisdictions to implement full ECR for all reportable conditions, to receive the data into their surveillance systems and relieve providers of the burden of parallel manual reporting. So we've got a lot of ideas about what different actors and stakeholders should be doing, public health, providers, health system, ONC. I think we'll probably have a number of comments. We can sort out which goes where. So let's start with Arian Malik.
Thank you. I think I had a lie here because this is a pretty meaty recommendation, but just to gloss a couple of these things. One is, and this is an overarching set of recommendations. I think public health has been best integrated in the information sharing systems of the country when it's leveraged standards and implementation guidance that are lined up with, for example, USCDI and implementation guidance that are associated in the provider community. That's been the thrust of my comments on, for example, lab orders and lab results. To the extent that we build a system of which public health is a part, that's going to drive a better outcome than having public health-specific standards. And I think we saw in the reportable conditions standards a set of rather bespoke CDA standards that were implementable, but were sort of dropped in out of context and hard to leverage. So the comment on ECR and ECR Now, I think ECR and ECR Now are an inherently much better approach. I'd like to see ECR transition from a CDA-based standard to a FHIR-based standard.
only because I think that helps as we move EHRs more to a fire-based API approach, that helps public health tap into EHR data more flexibly. I have the same comment relative to ADT. I think encouraging the use of ADT based surveillance is a fantastic thing that we should be doing. I'd also recommend that we explore leveraging the ECR and ECR Now based trigger-based approach to be able to capture more finely grained data and specific data, both from registration systems and from EHRs, that could provide a better means for upfront surveillance. But in general, the overarching comments are line up our certification standards and our implementation guidance associated with the corresponding work being done in the EHR community so that we view public health as part of a broader ecosystem and leverage the standards and workflows that are already being leveraged and, you know, really jump on the fire bandwagon in order to take maximal advantage of the broad investment that we're making in health information interoperability. Thank you.
Thanks, Arian. Let's go to Steve Eichner.
Good morning again. Thank you. I think there's a variety of reasons that standards that have been released haven't been adopted, and that includes in part that they may not meet the requirements or the needs of states or other jurisdictions. So to release IGs that say that clarify the standards requirements may not be really good if the standards requirements don't reflect the actual data needs of incorporating state and local health departments' needs in data standards. I think becomes terribly relevant. And looking at working with providers in the recommendations, I think it really needs to be CDC, ONC, working with state governments and local health jurisdictions on developing data standards that support the broadest range of public health needs, and working with providers to also develop and implement those standards on occasion, perhaps compromising on what a particular standard is, if the data is being collected in a different way and that way is acceptable. I think we also need to look at having standards that are flexible, where we can add additional elements in at the state level and support a national framework for supporting those standards. But if we look at disability, while we've got a lot of focus recently on race and ethnicity, there really aren't any national standards used to collect any information about disability status, except perhaps are you disabled, without additional drill down information about the nature of the disability and how it impacts their lives. That can be particularly valuable as we're looking at supporting services for evacuation in response to national disasters, but also becomes relevant as we're looking at issues in accessing healthcare. So I think that's an area that we really need to explore and come up with a good national standard that supports syndromic surveillance and other data collection efforts. Thanks.
Thanks, Steve. Let's go to Clem McDonald.
Yeah, so a couple of issues. One, I think it's not always clear to discussants that a standard is typically a definition of a set of slots where later one can specify what questions or what specific data elements, you know, questions really go into those slots. So we have to, so typically a HL7 standard will typically just define places to put the things you might want to send or ask for. The second thing is that, again, I think we need more mutuality between public health and practitioners, because I've seen many data collection forms for public health purposes that are very painful, and they differ from site to site. And they're painful in that
the data could be inferred from other data if you phrase it differently within the medical record. So I think there's got to be some sensitivity to the overburden in primary care at present time, and you can't pile on. But if there's a discussion back and forth, I think one could get better data and get better cooperation.
Thanks, Clem. Let's go to Les Leonard.
Yes, I saw some comments here about, and there's discussion about electronic case investigation or case reporting. And I want to emphasize that that may not be the ideal future state. What I think we want to do is automate case investigation using EHR data. And we want triggers for that, which might be very simple, but then we want the ability for public health to be able to dig deeply into EHRs, into things that may not have been previously anticipated, to be able to rapidly investigate emerging infectious disease. So that the thought here is that case reporting is probably reflects this paradigm of information supply chains, and we need to think more about information ecosystems. And so a simple trigger with the tooling or the standards for automated investigation or queries via FHIR of EHRs by public health.
Thanks, Les. Do we have additional comments from Public Health Data Systems Task Force members? Please raise your hand in Adobe. Are there any task force members on the phone who can't raise their hand but have a comment? Okay, let's go to Bryant Karras. You might be on mute, Bryant.
Hi, sorry. I think one of the challenges is that this section is titled, standards gaps, but I think that one of the challenges is really full execution of standards as opposed to what's deemed as the bare minimum. And I think there's a disconnect between the provider community, hospital community, and the public health community that when a standard is agreed upon by all the states on these public health standards, the optional data elements that are listed in the standard aren't optional for the vendors to implement. All of the capabilities need to be there, and then it's up to the states to decide which of the data elements are required within their jurisdiction. It shouldn't be optional for the vendors to choose to or to not have that capability in place.
Thanks, Brian. Let's go to Cheryl Turney.
Sorry, I couldn't get off the mute. I just wanted to pile on to what Leslie said earlier, because I do agree that we would want to have the intelligent query capability, but really not just limited to EMR systems. It should be extended to any of the authorized, qualified parties in the or qualified entities within the ecosystem that are authorized to perform this research. Because, we have our research arm that's basically been tapped by CDC and others multiple times to do research, and getting the data is, extremely difficult. So I do think that we need to look at all of the partners in the ecosystem when we're looking at that.
Thanks, Cheryl. Any additional comments from task force members? Okay. Jim Gerges, go ahead, please.
Yeah, I just wanted to echo what a lot of people have said about the state-to-state variation. I think Clem talked about the burden. In our 20 states, you could identify a subset that you could actually adhere to implementation guides and federal standards, not local.
But then there was a tremendous amount of variation in additional elements, and often with a very, very challenging, almost lack of understanding of what it takes to actually get reliable data. So just a plug to use whatever levers HHS has to go beyond just optional, you know, methodologies, because the burden is enormous.
Thanks, Jim. Any additional comments from task force members? I know this is one of the meatier sections with a lot of recommendations, and certainly we will be looking at some of these again after we incorporate the feedback we're getting today. But as this is a pretty critical part of our work, I want to be sure we have an opportunity for a good first pass.
Hey, this is Arian, and I apologize for jumping back in the queue, but there's a really interesting discussion going on in the public comment that may warrant some future discussion. And this is really around the point of, I think, states believing that they have the authority to do some tailoring around standards and implementation guidance. And, you know, I think the national, sort of the national actors, cross-state health systems, folks who develop information technology systems and the like, see that approach as leading to fragmentation and high cost and actually low data access, and would prefer a national approach where we have a standards-based ecosystem that allows for maximal information flows at minimal overall investment. And it feels like this is something where there's strongly held beliefs on both sides, and it might be worth at some point just explicitly having a discussion about this point, because it feels to be pretty foundational to where we are right now as a country. Thank you.
Thanks, Arian. I see there's been quite a lot scrolling through the public and task force chat. Thank you for bringing that forward to us. I agree it will be something that we will wind up incorporating into our recommendations someplace. Do any of the task force members have points about that or cross-questioning to Arian's comments? Please raise your hand and connect. I know we have quite a lot with this group of recommendations around standards, and certainly this is a key part of our work. Are you able to reshare the screen, ONC? I think some of us have lost view of it, probably with all the comments going in and out. I think we're not able to.
This is Janet Hamilton, and while we're waiting for the screen maybe to be reshared, I would just echo, I think this is an area for additional exploration, and I think as we look at this and the discussion going forward, it will be critical that we think about the different surveillance goals at the different levels within public health, and then that corresponds, of course, to the different data needs in those places. And so as we look towards trying to have more harmonization, it will also be really critical that we still support the state laws and activities that, of course, govern public health surveillance.
I agree. I see Jim Gerges has loaded a number of comments into the chat. Jim, do you want to go ahead and speak to that, please?
No, what I was going to do is just comment that one idea would be to take advantage of the COVID-19 pandemic and do a survey of all the different questions and interpretations that each of the states asked for during that, because that'll give a broad data set whereby you could identify whether there were key areas of focus beyond just the lab, et cetera. Like, for example, Florida had, 50 or 70 additional questions. And because we have that reality, there may be opportunity to analyze that and then determine if there's if more than one state asks for additional data, understanding why and making sure that we don't miss that in our those data sets in our recommendations.
Thanks, Jim. Being that I see no more hands related to this group of recommendations at this point, I think we will, let's see if we can scroll up a little bit and see what comes next. Okay, it looks like that's quite a large group of recommendations. We might, what time are we doing public comment, Mike?
About 5 till the end time, so 7:55. I'm sorry. 12:25.
Okay. If we could scroll back up slightly, why don't we go ahead and get started on the technology and infrastructure factors. There's a good bit here, but just 4 recommendations, so we might as well start thinking about that. So here we go. With this group, this has to do with technology and infrastructure factors that affect the key surveillance use cases. And it looks like the gaps are numerous. Some of those include the lack of central patient identifiers and ability to link patients across care settings and public health. Current processes to set up data exchanges place burden on providers and public health for testing new interfaces, as well as a lack of centralized national infrastructure that leads to duplicative and burdensome reporting. Also a lack of clarity on how to protect patient privacy while promoting interoperability. A lack of infrastructure funding across public health leading to data silos. Provider administrative overload and a perceived lack of value in data reporting. A lack of consistent HIEs and capabilities for public health reporting. A lack of standards on describing SDOH and where SDOH data should be collected. Differences in social service data systems will create difficulty in connecting to public health and clinical, and some additional ones as well. The opportunity would be direct messaging capabilities within public health jurisdictions could facilitate efficient, secure communications with providers in support of case reporting, investigation, and management. So here we have 4 draft recommendations. I'll read those as a group, and then we can discuss. First, CDC and ONC should incentivize implementation of FHIR request retrieve standards within public health departments. Number 2, CDC and ONC should explore the development of centralized reporting gateways to avoid duplicative reporting workflows for providers. Number 3, CDC should investigate how current funding streams may impede data sharing. And number 4, CDC and ONC should support pilots of direct secure messaging with providers. So, a very brief overview. Let's start raising hands and we'll get into the discussion. Bryant Karras, please go ahead.
Yeah, so one, this is a question for our ONC colleagues. I need some clarity. Is that direct messaging in all caps? Direct, as in the direct standard, or the English definition of the term direct? I think one of the challenges with direct messaging as a standard is that it doesn't support some of the bidirectional public health messaging that's needed to successfully get information back and forth for both e-case reporting and syndromic surveillance. So could someone clarify, is that direct in all caps referring to the direct standard, or is that just talking about?
Yes, that's direct, the capital D.
Well, it's all caps.
No, this is Stephen Lane. I actually submitted that one into the spreadsheet, so I can
tell you what I meant. It's a capital D. I mean, it's not actually all caps. It's not an acronym for anything. But we're talking about the direct messaging that is supported within the direct trust framework, and that type of messaging is quite flexible in terms of how it can be used. The advantage that it has over, say, you know, future Firebase messaging is that it's here today, that all certified health IT, you know, supports both the sending and receiving direct messages. It's already being used as part of the initial implementations of electronic case reporting. The challenges that the public health entities themselves are not yet enabled for the most part to leverage direct, but all the providers in APHL are. So that was the source of this comment or suggestion.
Yeah, I think it's we ended up going with more advanced standards that were advocated through the IAG protocols rather than direct. I think that it's, to a certain extent, yes, I agree with you, it's available today, but it's not not necessarily available on both sides of the communication of channels. So I think there's some challenges there in advocating for that as opposed to determining what is the best approach. It's available in all states and jurisdictions.
Thanks, Bryant. Let's go to Nell Lepre.
I wanted to comment a little bit on the FHIR recommendation. I think FHIR is definitely a great long-term goal for many of the exchanges we're talking about. One of the concerns I have is if there is a workable standard existing in use today that is solving the need, I worry that focusing broadly on incentivizing FHIR is going to force change and force funding to go towards, you know, enabling that change unnecessarily instead of focusing on use cases that specifically have a need and are a gap right now. So I think if we're going to be talking about incentivizing FHIR, I do want to make sure that we're trying to define use cases so that we are addressing the gaps that exist instead of replacing standards that exist and are used and are working today.
Thanks, Nell. Let's go to John Kansky.
Thanks, Carolyn. I think this is a quick logistics question. In the Google Docs, I added some potential recommendations that are responsive to gap number 6, lack of consistent HIE and capabilities for public health reporting. Is that sufficient to have those recommendations considered, or do I need to kind of reiterate?
Let's see. I see your comment here up on the screen, John. If you can briefly reiterate, that's probably helpful for those who aren't able to see these.
Sure. And quickly, it's true that HIEs do not have consistent capabilities for public health reporting today, and I suggest a few recommendations. One, it's probably redundant with elsewhere, which is that ONC and CDC should standardize a set of public health reporting nationally so that HIEs and, frankly, any other approach to public health reporting can build to that standard. More on point are two recommendations related to, one, federal policy barriers, and actually two, federal policy barriers, and three, state-level policy barriers. I'll give an example. In the state of Indiana, there's a law that allows immunization data to be shared with the Health Information Exchange so that we can do good things with that. And there's also, but that doesn't exist in other states, preventing the HIEs from having that role. And those barriers prevent flow in both the directions of reporting and the directions of receiving and sharing with the provider community. Thank you.
Thanks, John. Let's go to Clem McDonald.
So this may be the same old song or theme, but so people talk about we should get CDC and CMS and public health together to decide to get this done. What about the people you're asking to give you the data? What about practice communities to get some sense? I think you'd get a better output and more cooperation if they had some say in how the questions were defined and asked, and especially if they're asked to find more uniformly across local boundaries. But we just can't leave them out. I mean, they got no time left. And so if you're at data collection costs, so we ought to give some input to them to kind of modulate what the questions are and how they're asked for case reporting. And this may also speak to Les's point, you know, that better if you could just pull it out of the medical record, you save everybody time and effort.
Thanks, Clem. Let's go to Abby Sears.
Yeah, hi. I didn't notice just on the face value of the recommendations that one of those would solve the issues around patient matching that we're experiencing. And so I guess I would like to recommend that we do something, whether it's a national identifier or that we find something that will help with that patient matching algorithm.
Thanks, Abby. I see we are getting quite close to our public comment time and our wrap-up of the meeting. And I also see that Steve Eichner and Jim Gerges have your hands raised. So I will ask each of you to wrap up in no more than 30 seconds. Go ahead, Steve. Steve Eichner, I think you may be on mute. Do you have a 30-second comment?
I was. I think fire standards are important to look at. I also think we need to look at patient privacy and managing that as well. One of the challenges, I think, for at least some public health departments would be looking at responding to a population-level request for data. If we receive, for example, a request from every provider in Texas for the entire patient population on a nightly basis, I'm not sure that we've got enough server capacity to respond to those requests. I think we also need to be very cognizant about the reasons public health is collecting data and our responsibility to patients and individuals about sharing that data and what happens once that data is shared to something like an HIE and how that's being reused. Public health is in a unique position to require data submission. We need to be careful about how we're releasing that data to protect patients' privacy and their interests.
And let's go to Jim Gerges.
Yeah, I'll be brief. Hey, this gets to the bidirectional. In the middle of pandemics, et cetera, having a record locator be part of the solution so that when providers are encountering patients, they don't have to do the work of figuring out where the patient has had testing done, whether it be public health departments themselves or elsewhere, but that in the course of seeing a patient, where the patient's records could be located and then information automatically retrieved to assist in care. So I'm adding record locator capabilities to the suggestions to ONC.
Thanks, Jim. And with that, I will pass the mic to Mike Berry to take us into public comment.
Great. Thank you, Carolyn. I appreciate that. And operator, we'd like to open up the line for public comments.
Thank you. If you would like to make a public comment, please press *1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. You may press *2 if you would like to remove your line from the queue. And for participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star key. One moment while we poll for comments.
And And I just want to mention while we're waiting, we do have the next Public Health Data Systems Task Force meeting during this time next Thursday. And I also want to mention that our monthly HITECH meeting is next Wednesday. We have a full day plan from about 9:30 to 2:40-ish. And Stephen Lane and Arian Malik, who are both on this task force, will be presenting the USCDI task force's recommendations from the phase two work. And Arian and David McCauley will be presenting their recommendations from the ISP task force. So we'll look forward to that and the HITECH vote. All right, with that, operator, do we have any comments?
There are no comments at this time.
Okay, thank you. Carolyn, Janet?
Thanks, Mike. I will just briefly thank everyone on the task force for the good work you're doing in filling out the homework and getting into the spreadsheets, taking care of that for us. We had a great discussion today with a lot of helpful feedback. I think that will definitely inform the presentation that Janet and I make to the full HITECH next week. And we will work with our colleagues at ONC to ensure that information about the time of that presentation is sent out to you. So if you want to call in and listen to the discussion, you're able to do that efficiently. I will now pass the mic to Janet for her comments and next steps. Thank you.
Great. Thanks so much, Carolyn. So I will just highlight for folks that we do have more homework coming based on just the volume of comments received in the crosswalk. Some of the discussion items, or actually all the discussion items that we had planned for today, we did not get to. So we really would like you all to take an opportunity to put your thoughts in the homework, and we will continue to use that process to really help shape and form the comments that we have and are able to share with one another during the meeting time.
And Brett and Brenda, did you have any further comments or clarifications about our next steps?
Yeah, I just thought, you know, watch your inboxes from the HITECH team to be sending out new SurveyMonkey links to complete. Those will likely be going out by tomorrow, and then if folks can have those back in by Tuesday morning around 10 a.m. Eastern time, that will allow us to get things turned around. We'll also be sending along the Google Docs link to allow folks to further comment and on new areas or existing areas that are already listed in the crosswalk document.
All right, looks like we are wrapped up for today. So thank you again, everyone, for joining us, and we will adjourn and see you next week. Have a great day.
Thank you, everyone, for your participation.
Thanks, all.